Hunter may be in that dirt hole, Lieutenant. We're not going to spook him by barging into town with a whole company of cavalry. Don't worry about workmen and me. Just wait for the alarm trigger. Colton raised an eyebrow, so she repeated, Don't worry. The alarm will work. You'll feel a tug. Just follow it. Probably to the nearest tavern. Wait for the second alarm, and then come in hard and fast. Understand? Colton nodded. Tanea crammed a broad-brimmed hat over her thick orange ochre hair and nodded at workmen. The sergeant was also plainly dressed in raw muslin trousers and tunic, but he openly wore a long, heavy dagger on his left hip. With his weapon, and with the brutal arrow scar that marked his left cheek from mouth to ear, and with an ugly scowl to match that scar, workmen wasn't likely to have much trouble with casual thieves or rowdies. Tanea led the way out of the banana grove where the cavalry company was bivouacked. She strode into Orange Grove Town, taking the air of a noblewoman out for a stroll, with workmen trailing behind like a slab of hired muscle. They could have saved the acting. The streets were nearly deserted. The town square was sun-baked, dusty, and empty but for a few market stalls. The sellers were all women, locals, short folk with leaf-green skin and violet hair. They all wore the same sort of clothes Tanea had seen on her way through Ortsan province so far. White cotton blouses with bright embroidery at the neckline and hem and on the bodice. Their cotton skirts fell only to the knee, scandalously short for the halls and sitting rooms of the northern heartland of the Kistral Empire, but admittedly appropriate for the heat of Ortsan. Tanea saw stalls sparsely stocked with vegetables, sugar cane, fruit, colorful thread, or bolts of home-woven muslin, but no buyers. The vendors gave workmen suspicious looks, but they warmed quickly to Tanea. She smiled and chatted, trying to match the vendors' patois, snatches of imperial interspersed with bursts of rapid local pidgin. She overpaid for a pair of mangoes in one stall and a foot-long slice of cane in another, and before long they were chatting away with her. It took her less than half an hour to find out what she needed. The mayor of Orange Grove was a lazy crook. The shrine to Quam on Creek Street was crumbling and hadn't had a priest in years. The roughest tavern in town was a rum dive called the Filthy Bucket, and it was down on Tanner Street, where no one decent ever went. The sun was dipping behind the mountains as Tanea touched the brim of her hat and bade the market vendors good evening. She strolled down to Creek Street to the shrine. It was wrapped in evening shadows under the shade of a spreading coal-cut tree. It was a simple, 10-foot square, brick-paved floor under a weathered timber canopy. The paving bricks were buckled, or cracked, or missing, and the whole was overgrown with weeds. A brick alcove for votive stood empty next to a simple stone altar. A pity to see Quam so neglected, Tanea said. Workman nodded beside her. We should pray, she said. Workman shuffled his feet and bowed his head. Tanea prayed. Quam, Emperor of Heaven, you put the 40 crowns of Kistral on the head of your servant, our Emperor Willard. Give me strength, O Quam, to defend your chosen ruler and bring your glory back to this forsaken province. And give me the wisdom and strength to bring Hunter to justice. She paused, clenched her fists, then breathed deeply and finished. Soon. With her invocation complete, they set out to find the Filthy Bucket. It wasn't hard. Tanner Street reeked like every other Tanner Street in the Empire, reeked of blood, offal, and urine. In Orange Grove, a whiff of mud and rotting fish wafted up from the river to add a distinctive local bouquet. The tavern itself was a ramshackle affair. Walls of loosely woven wicker and a sagging roof of palm fronds, all held up by a few slender poles. It was still quiet. The evening crowd just started to trickle in. Across the street, and 20 yards further on, a woman under a mango tree was cooking a huge pot of stew beans and chicken over an open fire and selling supper by the bowl to a little crowd. Tanea strolled to the open-air eatery and ordered a bowl for herself and workmen. They ignored the other customers and settled down with their backs to the mango tree. They ate slowly, watching the door of the Filthy Bucket. As dusk thickened and the night closed over the town, a parade of men came out of the shadows and began to fill the tavern. A racket of scratching and thumping that was supposed to be music started up. Singing and cheering mingled with shouted jokes and bursts of hilarity. By the time they finished their supper, the tavern sounded like the site of a perpetual riot. By and by, the woman packed up her cookpot and went into her nearby hovel. Tanea tilted back her hat and waited even longer, watching the stars come out and wheel in the sky until another hour had passed. She wanted the drinking to be well underway before she arrived. Finally, she stood, and workmen followed her over into the Filthy Bucket. Tanea shouldered her way through the crowd and slapped a gold coin on the counter in front of a harried barmaid. The barmaid was young, pretty, with a white blouse similar to the woman selling beans, but the neckline was so deep it nearly fell off her green shoulders. She took a look at the coin, looked back at Tanea, and her mouth fell open. "Your best for me, and a couple of rounds for the house," Tanea shouted over the terrible music, "and a table by ourselves." "That one!" She pointed at a corner table where a group of men sat drinking and throwing bones. "Yes, my lady," the barmaid shouted back.